Welcome back. It's Swing Pass. I'm Adam Ruffner. That's Cameron Brock. We are 1 week out from the drop of the 2024 UFA schedule. We're in the midst of tryout season for all 24 of the league's teams. Rosters are starting to get finalized, but as we've talked about a few times on this show during the offseason, there hasn't been much in the way of big name signings during the past several months, and that is in such contrast to how we entered the 2023 season. We think about LA bringing on Pavel Giannis, which led to the return of Sean McDougal. They bring in the rookie of the year, Lucas Ambrose. There's all the excitement out there. DC reloaded with some of the best talent from the Central Division, bringing in Thomas Edmonds, Andrew Roy. They bring in Joe Merrill from the Salt Lake Shred. The Shred added Grant Linsley before last season. There was movement all over the place throughout the league. And yet this year, it's been relative crickets. I mean, we talked about it briefly, I believe in one of the last episodes, about how Matt Rader, a part-time player for the last several seasons between Seattle and Carolina and even supposedly Minnesota during the strike withheld, pandemic withheld 2020 season. But aside from him and some other smatterings of signings and re-signings of team vets, there's just been nada as far as a hot stove goes before the 2024 UFA season. But yesterday, there was a significant roster announcement, but it was in the absolutely wrong direction, as Colorado Summit defender and 2022 Defensive Player of the Year in the UFA, Cody Spicer, announced his retirement after just two seasons with the team. He leaves as the team leader in both defensive points played and blocks. He had over 200 more defensive points played than the next closest Summit player over the past two seasons, really showcasing his captainship position on that team. We've talked about on this show, it's been talked about extensively throughout the league the past 2 years. Ian Toner wrote a great article at the end of the 2022 season talking about Spicer's defensive play. He's just been one of the most dynamic defenders we've ever seen in this league. He can guard handlers in the backfield. He can go downfield and cover workhorse receivers. He seems to have a kind of dynamic quality to his coverage skills and an adaptability to any matchup where he just can negate what opposing number one options do best and force those teams into plan B, plan C, etc. Cam, you've experienced in your significant experience in this league a lot of these kinds of significant defensive departures. What's it like for a defensive unit, to lose a defender of the caliber of Spicer? What's it like to lose your number one cover guy? I mean, Colorado's effectively been able to say, hey, go out there and take the other team's best player and shut him down or force him into one of the harder games he's going to have all year. Spicer's done that with great aptitude. When you don't have that, it just sort of scatters everything else to the wind a little bit with matchups, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's and like you mentioned with Cody Spicer specifically, his range and who he can cover. I mean, watching him in 2022, you know, in the Western Division Championship game on Jordan Kerr, and then their game against Chicago at Championship Weekend on Pavel Giannis. Like, you can't get two players that play as different probably in this league as Jordan Kerr and Pavel Giannis. And like, from everything from the position they play to their role on the field to the height, like, it's all completely different. And in both roles, he was incredibly effective. We know Pavel loves stats, so we know we'll give you a stat for this in that game, which Chicago did win pretty easily. Of course, this wasn't a Cody Spicer issue, but a Chicago team who was primed and ready to really take that next step after coming so close to the championship game the year before. Pavel only had a couple of assists in that game. You know, he was getting the disc still. He still had, I think, 48 completions on the day. But 48 for him is not even a high number. And he was not getting the disc in the positions that were putting him in, I guess, the more dangerous positions on the field. He was forced to get the disc a lot more in resets. And it was actually him relying on his teammates to do more of the playmaking and facilitating deeper down the field. So very interesting when you have a guy like that, and it really hurts. We had a season, I want to say it was in 2017 maybe, where Jake Fella, who is kind of Indianapolis's version of Cody Spicer, they're about the same height. They kind of do the same thing where we would put Specs, as we call him, we'd put him on just whoever we felt the best matchup was. Sometimes that was a handler, sometimes that was a cutter. He was so versatile in what he could do for us. And when we lost him early during a season in 2017, that was huge for us. It changes your whole game plan on defense, because now you don't have that kind of jack of all trades defensive player that you can always line up on specific matchups. And not only that, but when you lose one of your best defenders, of course, that shifts the matchups for everyone else. So you now have to put another person out there to replace Cody Spicer. And, you know, newsflash, Colorado doesn't have another Cody Spicer sitting around, because nobody has another Cody Spicer sitting around. And that's just going to make the matchups that much more difficult for everyone else. And then you're going to have to add a seventh guy who wouldn't even be out there. So this is huge. And another thing is Cody Spicer stepped up and played in a lot more offensive points last year. You know, he was going out there when they would get broken and was a reliable person to put on that line. He played more offensive points last year, despite the fact that he played three fewer games last year than he did in 2022. So they're not just losing a guy who was a great defender, but somebody who they could rely on to kind of calm things down if they got broken, or make sure that on a turnover that they had somebody who was going to be a steady presence in the backfield.
I mean, I think I've talked so far about Spicer in terms of his defensive coverage ability exclusively, but there's the whole other role that he inhabits on the counterattack as the anchor point, as a thrower, leading a lot of the break score opportunities for the Summit D-line. And I mean, over the past two seasons, I don't know if there's been a more reliable defensive quarterback on the counterattack than Spicer. I mean, to your point about him spelling into offensive rotations because of his disc skills, he had, I think, over 400 or 500 throwing yards in week 8 of last regular season on the road against Salt Lake when the Summit were down some of their normal offensive starters. They just plugged Spicer in. And obviously the result wasn't what they wanted, but Spicer produced as he always does. And now they lose that keypin, that kingpin, I should say. I'm thinking back even to the first point against New York. You know, the Summit eventually lose their week 12 bout against the Empire, but to begin that game, they get a break by Spicer picking off a pass at the front of the end zone, and then Summit's D-line marching down the field with Spicer often going every other on throws and getting a break score to open up 1-0 at home against the defending champs and eventual 2023 champ New York team. You know, he was just kind of both the alpha and omega of what felt like so many of the Summit's great defensive break opportunities the past two seasons for what has been a top five, if not top three, D-line unit, not only in terms of their potential in big game matchups, but also just in terms of their raw efficiency numbers and stuff. I mean, you talk about this 2023 Summit team, there is a lot of ups and downs in terms of the overall results, but their defense was there basically week in, week out. I mean, they were top six in terms of points allowed per game. They were third best in opponent offensive success rate. They were top three in both opponent red zone opportunity and the best team in the league at limiting opponent huck success rate. Like, this is a team that can defend in small spaces, in big spaces, and that was such an identity that they derived off of, again, Spicer, his ability to kind of inhabit all of those roles in different positions on the field. They could put Cody Spicer on that, on the opposing team's top matchup, and then they could say, hey, let's put Alex Tatum, Noah Kuhlman, Matthew Agee, Saeed Semrin, all these other terrific defenders on a more advantageous matchup that we like, and allow them to be more aggressive, allow them to go a little bit more pressure-oriented. It's sort of like with Spicer in place, they allowed these other athletes on their D-line to be like edge rushers, that they could kind of just pin their ears back and go get a block, knowing that somewhere else in the field, Spicer is going to be accounting and mitigating any sort of, you know, overplaying mistakes that someone else might make. Like, Spicer was sort of the ultimate safety valve, and now that's gone. And I think Colorado, for their depth, their coaching, their system, you know, they're going to return Mike Leung and Tim Kafalas this season as their coaching staff. That has to be, I think, a top five coaching staff in the league. They've just shown, I think, a tactical ingenuity in the West Division that is going to make them a perennial playoff contender for as long as those two are kind of calling the shots. And I think that they've obviously shown the depth and personnel able to withstand a fairly significant loss. But to your point, there's not going to be another Spicer walking in that door in the locker room. There's not going to be anyone to really replace them. It's going to have to be in some sort of aggregate form. And so now the question becomes, what does become of Colorado? Is this still a top three, top five defensive unit? Can they sort of find a slightly different variation of what's been so successful so far? This sort of ability to play really well, I think, in single coverage matchup, but also throw looks of zone and other things that I think the West Division doesn't always do a good job of implementing as far as defensive tactics. You know, I think there's a lot of ways that Summit can approach this problem, but Spicer departing, I mean, this is not going to only be felt within Colorado and the West Division, but as we were talking going into the show, this is going to have effects on multiple divisions in the 2024 season, because Colorado has so many interdivisional games. They have three games against Central Division opponents in you guys in Indianapolis, Madison, and Minnesota, and they play host to Atlanta in a Super Series game early on in the season. And so Colorado is going to have its sort of tentacles within the West Division, the Central Division, and the South Division's top end of the standings. And a loss of Spicer's caliber is certainly going to be felt in each and every one of those matchups. I mean, there's just no denying they're not going to have Spicer to take the other team's top option. And so then it becomes, obviously, a question for you, but all of the teams that match up with Colorado, how can we sort of take advantage of this? Like, what is going to be at stake here for a Summit team that's looking to rebound after an unexpected first round playoff exit to a visiting LA team?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. I mean, we have a little bit of the answer, I guess, to the question I'm about to ask, but like, is Colorado just a great defensive team regardless of if Cody Spicer's out there or not, or without Spicer, are we going to see a significant drop off? Because when you have somebody who's that versatile and who you can just consistently say, hey, go guard their most impactful player, and you know that he's going to do a good enough job to, at the very least, disrupt what that player wants to do, then does the rest of the team struggle? Like, I don't know. I think I have a lot of questions here about what that's going to look like. We'll find out pretty early on, right? Like, we'll see a couple, two or three games in, what it looks like. But I'm going to go ahead and just go on the record right now and say that losing Cody Spicer officially, to me, clearly cements Salt Lake as the top team in that division, unless we see some weird roster thing with Salt Lake. Of course, we're still waiting on rosters, so for all we know, a big name for Salt Lake is going to say that they're not playing anymore. But I think
when I don't know. They've been announcing like half their roster on Instagram the past week, and It's basically their entire offense is returning, including Grant Lindsley, who I think was the biggest question mark.
That was the biggest one, yeah.
He would come back for second season with the shred. He's back. They figure to return most of their defensive starters. I have heard rippling that Joel Clutton might not be returning to the team in 2024. Obviously, he had such a profound impact on the late season results of the shred, that just miraculous buzzer beating Mac to make it into overtime in the semifinal matchup with Minnesota, and was runner up for defensive player of the year in 2022 to Cody Spicer. Clutton might not be back But he signed on mid-season for the Shred. He wasn't even an official go for them until like July of last year. And so they've been able to kind of endure that. But yeah, to your point, I feel like the Shred are going to return 90%+ of their roster from the team that won the division last year. And Colorado's going to be absent the top defender in the division the past two seasons.
And the big question too, I guess if there is one question for Salt Lake, it's Elijah Jaime. Like, is he back? He, you know, a lot of people forget that he was the person catching the Mac from Joel Clutton, and had it not been for him hustling down the field, like I loved the video that I saw where someone pointed out, like, look where Elijah Jaime was when the huck went up, and then look, obviously he was the one who ended up catching it. But yeah, I mean, even if he's not back, that's not nearly the loss that a Cody Spicer is to Colorado. He just, Jaime's a great player, but he's not going to have the same impact, I don't think, on the field. And so, yeah, I think when we were already kind of wondering, is this Salt Lake's division to lose in the first place? Now you're telling me that Colorado's maybe most impactful player on their roster isn't going to be back. I think that for me, clearly, you know, tilts things in Salt Lake's favor. Now, one thing we know is Colorado is still loaded. They still have tons of talent on both sides of the disc. They're still going to have a fighting chance. This isn't like, oh my gosh, season's over, you know, let's push the panic button. But it is definitely going to be interesting to see how they perform in there, because I mean, this is only their third year. This will be their first non-Cody Spicer year. And what do you do when one of the top defenders in the entire league, somebody who was voted defensive player of the entire league in 2022, what do you do when that player is gone? If there's any silver lining for Colorado, they know this information very early. This isn't something that's coming in like right before games start. They're going to have plenty of time to make adjustments and figure out what they're going to do with these top matchups going into games. I mean, Cody Spicer didn't play in every game last year anyway, so on occasion they did have to figure out what to do, but it's just like, but still, you can't replace him. So it's almost like it's like Moneyball. You got to replace him with five guys. You can't replace him with one. You got to find a way to manufacture the Cody Spicer pressure some other way.
Don't get me on a Moneyball rant. First off, I love that movie. It's a great movie. Great, just like procedural baseball nerd kind of stuff. But like, the premise of it is absolutely broken. The reason why the Oakland Athletics were successful in those seasons wasn't because they convinced Scott Hatteberg to convert to first base. It was because they had a pitching rotation of Mark Mulder, Barry Zito, and Tim Hudson, and they had Miggy Tejada, Eric Chavez, and some other absolute
semantics. Semantics.
But I hear what you're saying. You know, you're not just going to, again, expect another Cody Spicer to walk in that door. And so what starts to happen, as you say, in the aggregate? And I do think that in that sense, Colorado might be better suited than just about any team outside of, say, New York and Atlanta to handle at least a bit of the blow from this kind of loss. Because Noah Kuhlman really was coming on for that team towards the end of the season in his first year with the Summit, and showed in the club postseason a real knack for just, I think, more and more clean playmaking. I think at the beginning of his career, there's a little bit of baggage around the aggressiveness with which he was pursuing layout bids. And that did continue a little bit into last season, but it feels like he's starting to really start to get the timing down, where his athleticism and his instincts are just matching up to make him a truly next level defender. I think he was fantastic. Saeed Semrin was tied for the team lead in blocks last year, despite missing almost half the season with an injury. He's a big man who likes to hustle into space to go to get the disc. Terrific option there. You know, you talk about Sandy Brown, Nick Snuska, Seth Ferris, Matthew Agee, Alex Tatum, the latter two being all rookie mentions from the prior season. Alex Tatum also missing some time last season with an injury, feels like he might be due for a big rebound year. One of the more springy, I think, block-oriented defenders in the West Division. Like, they've just got I haven't even gotten to Felix Pronove, Kai Marshall. They spelled Connor Olsen on the defense. Connor Tabor. I wrote about this in the West Division preview article that'll be coming out tomorrow, but Connor Tabor you know, speaking of another player who kind of took off during the club season, one of the purest throwers you're going to see, just absolute dime releases, forehand, backhand, hammers, big range. He could take over some of the throwing responsibilities, the Spicer's vacating on the counterattack. Like, I'm saying all this to say there is personnel here for Colorado to implement a still very strong defensive system. I think the question just becomes, what is the effect of dropping from, you know, third best at limiting opponent offensive efficiency to, say, eighth? What does that mean in the scope of this West division that is evolving seemingly on like a weekly basis sometimes? I mean, the LA, Seattle, Oakland teams in the West division, they're not fooling around with this youth stuff. Like those kids want to come in and win these games against good teams. And so it's just a matter of, does Colorado fall? And if they do fall, how far and where will that put them otherwise? Because the thing, again, is that this defense is what sort of bolstered Colorado last year. The offense, for all of its talent, struggled at times for the Summit. There was just not much sense of consistency as to who is going to be operating in the backfield last season, you know? And again, I think that fallen stature is such a key part in this. You know, you kind of talk about how Colorado entered the West Division at the beginning of 2022. You know, they immediately announced the signings of the 2017 league MVP, Jonathan Nethercutt, perennial all UFA member, Jay Fruit, Matt Jackson, a championship contender for years and years and a 2016 champion. You know, they bring in this host of league vets, all these big signings. They pin themselves as the pinnacle of the division. They've got arguably the best offensive player in Nethercutt and or Quinn Finer, and the best defensive player in Cody Spicer. And now, like, 18 months later, it's a completely different landscape, man. And there's, I think, just a little bit of, like, a head-swirling quality to the confidence, the swagger of this Summit team that relies so much on that kind of, I think, you know, aesthetic. Like they're, it's not something we can sit here and evaluate, like, how much Colorado is feeling it, but you could just see watching their games last year, they looked out of it. At the end of close games, they looked tired. They were 0-4 in one goal games last year. That sounds crazy for this Colorado team.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what their defensive numbers look like. The past 2 years, they've been fourth in the league both years in break percentage. Cody Spicer is obviously a huge part of that. But the big thing for me going next year is this. I think this is just going to put more pressure on their offense to be more efficient. I think defensively, they still have enough playmakers. They still have enough athletes and just good ultimate players that they're still going to be, I believe, a top, probably at least a top like 7 or 8 defensive team, I would think. At the very least, they're not going to drop outside like the top 10. Like, we're not talking about some huge, massive drop off or anything like that. But here's the thing: offensively, you talked about like the struggle. The big thing for me, and I just looked up the numbers to kind of confirm what I already thought was true, but they huck a lot and they're not very successful. And that's like the big issue, right? We talk about this has been kind of the moniker I feel like a lot of the league has put on the West. The West, they huck and pray. And, you know, the numbers kind of back that up. They huck more than other teams and they're not necessarily the top completion percentage teams. Last year they were third? They had the third most hucks in the league, and that's including, you know, a team like Austin that played 2 more games than them, but only had 13 more hucks than them. But when you look at what rate they're completing that at, they're like right in the middle of the league, despite the fact that they huck the third most times in the league. That just can't happen. And you think of a guy like Jonathan Nethercutt, right? Like, if there is a person more synonymous with a huck throw than Jonathan Nethercutt, I don't know who it is, but as a team, they are not completing at a very high percentage. Last year, completing only a little under 63% of their hucks. that's just not going to cut it. They're going to have to be more selective in those shots. They're going to have to connect on them more often. They're just going to have to be more efficient on offense because, you know, you talked about them being 0-4 in one score games last year. Well, if the defense just drops even a little bit, like say it's just one more goal, that one goal game just became a 2-goal game. And, you know, you have to just take ownership on offense, knowing that the defense isn't going to be, it could still be really good. I don't think it's gonna be quite to the elite spot it's been in the last couple of years. So I would take that as a challenge offensively, to be more possession oriented. And honestly, with the talent that they have on their offense, there's no reason they can't do something like that. They have speed and athleticism. They're more than capable as throwers of doing that. So I would really like to see just more efficiency on that side of the disc. And I know they were battling with people in and out of the lineup and injuries, and that happens to everyone though. So that just can't be an excuse. Like, you have to be able to put that next man up and have them fill in. Or if you know someone's going to be gone for half the season, despite having lots of offensive talent, maybe that's just a player that you just decide for that season's not going to play offense. You know, and those can be hard decisions to make. Like, you know, what do you do when you have a super talented offensive player who's only going to be there for 4 or 5 regular season games and may or may not be there for the playoffs? It's hard to say, but I think in the long run, if you know that going into the season, you take the person who's going to be there consistently, build that chemistry, build that comfort. Everyone kind of knows their role and knows what's expected. You know, we talked about this with like the Carolinas of the world from last year, where they looked very different offensively when Joe White was there versus when he wasn't there. And it just makes everything a little less comfortable when you can't get into a rhythm throughout the season. There's a reason that, as everyone likes to point out, the Alley Cats don't have that much talent compared to some of these other teams, right? And there's a reason that we consistently have a pretty good hold percentage, even outdoors, y'all. Because we've all played together so many games and we keep a pretty tight roster together on offense. We have like our one or two guys who are always the people who fill in on offense if we are missing someone. So even those guys are getting lots of reps. That was Spencer Loscar for a long time, was the guy who would come over every time someone was missing. Didn't matter if it was a handler or cutter, he filled in. Ben Landry's been that guy for us over the last couple of years. He just kind of fills in wherever we need him to. He's been really underrated
in that role. Yeah. Sorry, I had to interrupt because Landry's one of those guys you run 8-9 deep on some of your offensive rotations, and it's really hard to talk about him. And so I wanted to add a plus one there of, Landry is another one of those players. He completes passes at like a 96% clip, and you can just expect him to go in there, make a few solid plays, and take nothing off of the table as basically a quote-unquote replacement player in your starting seven.
And I think Colorado just kind of needs to find that. It just doesn't look like that's something that they can do as fluidly. I don't know what the reason
is. They have guys. I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, Sam Goldstein started to play a role like that for them as kind of that offside handler. He had played a lot of defense in the Summit's inaugural season in 2022 and then shifted into more of an offensive piece in 2023. I think he showed a lot of poise in his throwing capacity. But something happened, and it felt like they lost a little bit of confidence in the middle of the season. It might have had to do with how they lost Nethercutt from the starting rotation, and so Goldstein's role sort of morphed a bit, but they sort of lost implementing him in that way, and it felt like the Colorado offensive rotation suffered as a result because, to your point, they didn't have a Landry. They didn't have that kind of clear sixth man, I think would be the way you refer to it in the NBA, but that first off the bench sort of player who acts almost like a starting level talent because of their ability to bridge those gaps.
And the thing too is, like, with Nethercutt, he's such a special player and what he can do that no one you bring in is going to feel like you're bringing in somebody who's filling the same role. And, you know, so that's just like, how do you bring in somebody else to replace the guy who can just at any point in time just drop an 80-yard bomb with basically any throw, right? And just, you know, you see the no-look hammers to the opposite side of the field, and these throws that like most of us mere mortals wouldn't even attempt, right? And you're just going to have to play different when someone else is in there. And to your point, Goldstein did a great job when he's in there. It did look like that was maybe the route that they could go and that would be successful for them. But as you said, somewhere along the line, things went haywire and it just kind of didn't seem as smooth and they didn't look as confident out on the field.
Well, they also didn't have Alex Atkins for the entire season. He missed the first three games of the year with an injury. It was a weird year for Colorado overall, because it reminded me a little bit of 2022 Atlanta. Like, if you just look at box scores, team metrics, sort of where they rank in the overall number scheme of things, the sort of nerd sphere of analyzing, it's like, this is a great team. This team could compete for a championship. They've got this powerful, talented offense that can kind of open it up from any dimension on the field. And then they've got this championship level defense who has a clear cut number one defender in Spicer, and then a whole bunch of dogs willing to go get right after that. And it just never really materialized. I mean, we talk about their relative, I think, mediocrity in some of the overall deep attempt huck looks that they like to take. But you go back and you look at the numbers, I mean, their two top volume huckers from last season were Quinn Feiner and Alex Atkins, and they both completed 20 plus hucks. Quinn Feiner at 77.4%, Atkins at 68.9%. I mean, those are more than above league average, and yet they have these clearly established sort of trigger pullers on the deep attack. They sort of seemingly figure out something to replace the level of production that Nethercutt provides. But to your point, there is a difference between good throwers with depth in their game versus Nethercutt standing still and opening up the entire field for your offense. And just even anecdotally, I can apply that to the 2022 Summit versus the 2023 Summit, in that 2022 Summit, I mean, they would get that disc centered in Nethercutt, and they would have 40-yard gainers at multiple positions on the field. I mean, Fruit is streaking on one rail. They got Matt Jackson over here. Landisman at the end of the season was ranging all over. Like, they had options, and they had a lot of space to access them. This past year, it felt constricted. Obviously, they were successful when they got the disc to their main money playmakers, but aside from that, it kind of felt predictable. It was like, unless they're taking those deep looks from Feiner or Atkins or Nethercutt when he was available, they're otherwise just kind of looking to swing the disc and get it back to those guys in every other opportunity. And that limitation just felt so significant for a Colorado team that I think likes to get out in the open field and gallop and make big plays and galvanize off of the highlights, right? Like, and
I've got a couple questions for you. Is it time for Nethercutt to not play offense anymore? Like, have we gotten to the point where he cannot be on it? Like, and let's just look at the numbers, right? We have talked about how the league has gone to a more possession-oriented league where you need to be completing, you know, 95% of your passes. His 2 years in Colorado, he's averaged about a 92% completion rate. His huck numbers, actually, in terms of percentage, we were just talking about, he only completed 56.5% of his hucks last year.
I was admitting Nethercutt's 56% completion rate on deep passes.
He completed a little under 61 the year before, which is a little bit closer to, I mean, you really want that number up around 65 or higher. And, you know, in the way we've gone as a league, right, is this a guy that needs to be on your D-line where, yeah, you want to score, but you think about the fact that, I mean, him playing offense against O-line players, like, and I don't want to stereotype every O-line, because there are some fantastic defenders who play on the O-line, but in general, like, you're getting the disc when the offense has already done some running, they're tired, and their main focus, obviously, throughout their training and practices isn't always on defense. Like, you get in plenty of situations where you're at a huge advantage if you have like this apex handler on your D line, right? We actually had this in 2022 with Xavier Payne before he switched over to the O-line. He was just a menace for us when he was going every other and just, you know, literally pointing things out, controlling the whole flow of the offense. I mean, we broke on nearly 67% of our break chances, I think, throughout the season, which was obviously ridiculous. Like, do you switch a guy like Nethercutt permanently over to the D line? He's had some, he didn't play, he only played in 7 games last year anyways. If he's not going to be there all the time, is that something that you consider? Is it time to be like, hey, Nutt, you either need to start completing your passes at a higher rate and being a little more selective with what you're throwing, or you're going to have to find a spot on the D line?
I mean, here's the thing. I'll let you guess how many total defensive points has Nethercutt played for Colorado in his 20 starts the first 2 seasons. Don't look. You gotta guess. Come on. I can give you an over under, or I can give you like a ballpark.
I would say probably somewhere around 20.
Oh, you hit it on the head. It's exactly 20 defensive points played. So there's just like almost no data as to what that would look like. He's got over 250 points played in his illustrious career on defense in the league in 55 regular season career starts. So, you know, less than 5 points per game throughout his career. It's not really something that I think we're accustomed to seeing. And I think my biggest worry at this point in his career is what he would be taking away from another coverage opportunity from, again, a Colorado defensive unit that goes pretty deep as far as good defensive cover guys. And I think that they have enough of a counterattack still there as far as throwing depth. When you talk about, again, if Tabor is available on their D-line, Alex Tatum, Seth Ferris, I think really evolved as a counterattack option for them this past year. Like, they have some. Noah Kuhlman, I think, has a big, big motor to go every other and has shown an increasing capacity as a precision passer. Like, they have options, and so you never can say, like, adding Nethercutt to a unit won't improve your throwing aptitude, right? Like, of course he's going to be able to rip an absolutely fantastic hook, probably in quick transition to a streaking summit player that looks like, oh my God, why don't we do this in every defensive break opportunity? But by the same token, is it really worthwhile to maybe be relying on that in your break conversion opportunities when Summit have been otherwise good at kind of working the disc up on possession-based opportunity? Like, it feels like an inversion of their styles and in a way that doesn't necessarily work. But then you're faced with the idea of, do you work in Jonathan Nethercutt as a rotational piece? Is he sort of like the eighth player in offense that you work in when it's available? I mean, that's kind of head spinning to think about, but I just don't know that I love the option that you present with him going to defense. You know, they kind of tried that. They did the Freaky Friday switch with Cody Spicer and Nethercutt last year. And Daniel Cohen and I ranted and raved about how we didn't like that. It felt icky. Like, I don't know how else to encapsulate that without going deep into some stats and metrics, but it wasn't what Colorado is or has been. And so I don't know. I'm scared of change. I don't know how to feel about another cut on defense. Like, could it work? Absolutely. He's one of the most talented players to ever step foot on a Frisbee field, but
It's an interesting question, I think. And you talked about Colorado's identity with their defensive lines working the disc up the field, but who were they working it through? Cody Spicer.
He was maybe the best defensive quarterback over the past 2 seasons. I mean, his stamina, his ability to oftentimes reverse the leverage of him guarding a handler on defense and then being able to sort of body and position out a smaller player as a thrower working on the counter. I mean, that is the sort of stuff that is just, I think, invaluable for any other team. Like, you don't get opportunities, I think, to work through an individual who has the kind of skills and field IQ of a Spicer. Like, again, he's just irreplaceable. And so I hear you. I get that it's going to look fundamentally different. So I can't just keep pointing back to these, you know, defensive efficiency metrics and going, it'll be the same or just like a little bit worse. Like, no, the central identity piece of all that is gone now. But I guess I go back to the trust in the system, the trust in their personnel, and the trust in the coaching. Like, this is a team that has shown the ability to develop. This is a team that rated out as a top three unit despite all the injuries and absences that they suffered last year. Like, you know, Spicer wasn't available in every game. They did lose arguably their best rookie defender in Saeed Semrin for half the year. They had numerous other absences with Tatum and AG battling injuries. Like, this was a team not playing at full strength, and they still got these results. And so maybe they do lose Spicer, but maybe they get healthy and stronger everywhere else. They're just one of those teams where until I see it, it's hard for me to count them out. But, you know, they've got this third toughest schedule in the entire dang league ahead of them. They're facing off against you guys in Indy, Minnesota, and Madison in what will basically, I think, determine playoff ordering within your division.
Good.
Do you guys see Colorado, I think, differently now? Do you view them as a different contender? Do you maybe take them almost more seriously because they're like playing, I think, with a known disadvantage now? Like, how do you, sort of speaking on behalf of the rest of the league, which is totally fair for me to cast you into this role, how do you feel now facing the Summit team without Spicer? You know, you were probably gonna get a couple points of him.
I was hoping for it. I want the Cody Spicer experience. You got to, I mean, in, I don't know if this makes me weird or what, but like, I want Antoine Davis, like, come guard me, Antoine. And like, here's the thing. Like, I have to go into that matchup versus Cody Spicer, Antoine Davis, whoever, with 100% confidence that I'm going to win. I have to. Like, if you don't, you've already lost, like, as a player. So for me, I am a little disappointed, honestly. I would love to, I've never played against Cody. I would love to get a chance in that matchup and, you know, kind of see where I stack up. That being said, I don't think it changes our approach at all. I mean, that game's so far away from us anyway. I mean, we don't play them until July 4th weekend. Although I will say I started altitude training a month ago and we'll be continuing that all the way through the season because we have to go to Colorado and I plan on making a trip out to Salt Lake City this year as well. So I do altitude training multiple days a week right now. And I was looking forward to seeing if I could test out Cody Spicer's lungs up in that, you know, that golden Colorado air.
Look, man, I think he has like mountain goat lungs up there. I'm serious. I think one of the most impressive feats about him the past two seasons is the way he just doesn't seem to tire. There's not really an ability to get to his weaker self. It's just kind of having to stand in the ring and go all 12 rounds with him or all four quarters and endure it. I mean, that's kind of the task that Jordan Kerr has had the past few seasons going up against him. It's like, you might get him, and I've written about this in the past too. It's like you might get him on a given point or a given play, get a highlight on him. There was that sequence last year where Jordan Kerr got a hand block on him in transition. The very next throw, Spicer gets a hand block back on Kerr. And I just feel like that's so representative of how he's played defense for this team the past 2 years. Yeah. It's just like, sure, you might get me 1 point. I'm coming right back the next point. I would have loved to see you guys go at it. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. And this is maybe so you can feel a little bit more fueled. I would have had the advantage on Spicer, but I know you guys would have been trading a little bit at some point.
People have been picking the other person in the matchup with me my entire life. So
I know.
I'm okay with that.
I got to shovel more coal into that furnace, man. I don't want to get your fire. Like, You always no, you know, underdog position. Like you say, I can't just give it to you. I can't just say like, oh, you got this. You got to come out from under. I know how you work.
No, it'll be interesting because like I don't think like if I'm Salt Lake, right? I'm obviously like there's like a piece of I think all of us like when you're competing at the level we're competing at, like there's always that piece of you that. Like for me, I don't really love going into games where I know the team I'm playing against is missing like some of their best players. Doesn't give us an advantage on the field. And like at the end of the day, is that good for us as a team? 100%. But, you know, it always kind of feels like there's something missing. I remember when we got our first win against Madison in 2018, one of the most frustrating parts about that was that Pat Schreiwise couldn't make it to the game. There was some snafu with some flights and some other things. And then, of course, we had to read in the Tuesday toss about how like, oh, we beat Madison, but they were missing some people. And it was just like, isn't that just like we haven't won this matchup since since they've entered the league. We finally get it in year six of trying. And the people are just like, oh, well, you know, it wasn't really Madison. So does it really count? And, you know, it's kind of feels that way when, you know, almost like Colorado is still so good that like losing Cody Spicer for the season isn't the end all be all. But, you know, it does take a little bit of the excitement out of it for me because he was the defensive player of the year 2 years ago. And like I salivate at the opportunity to go up against great players and like just try to prove myself against them. So, I guess I'll just have to prove it against some of their other great players because they are a team of many great players, not just one. So I think they're still a very dangerous team. Do I think this definitely makes them weaker? Yes. Do I think it makes them weaker to the point where teams can not think about them? Not even close. This is a team, I don't think I would put them in the category without Cody Spicer of could potentially win a championship. But I still would have them in the tier of like, could definitely win their division, given the right circumstances, could still compete with just about any team in the league. I think the only thing it really does for me for sure is like, can they beat New York without Cody Spicer? I don't think so. Like, I think you need to have all hands on deck when you're playing against the juggernaut that is the Empire and losing somebody who can affect the game the way Cody Spicer did. I mean, you talked about the first point against New York. He stopped them in the red zone and, you know, converted that break, right? And what were they so good at last year? Not just defense in general, but their red zone defense in particular was incredibly impressive. So I think when it comes to that, I would say like it does take them out of the running in that category for me. But, and I think I do favor Salt Lake a little bit more now, but I still think they're talented enough that if they caught Salt Lake on the right day, they could definitely win that matchup, particularly at home. But their schedule's so tough, I would not be surprised to see them lose 4 or 5 games during the regular season because you take 2 Salt Lake matchups, which are obviously very losable. They lost them both last year. You take Minnesota, in Madison, hosting Atlanta, hosting Indy, not to mention the fact that they're obviously going to play LA a time or two and lost to them last year. I mean, those are a lot of games with lost to Oakland. Yes, I forgot about that. So like they have the potential for losing games is still out there. And with that tough schedule, it's just going to put more emphasis on everything they do. So I'm going to put the over-under at 7.5 regular season wins for them. What are you taking?
I think I'm still going to take the over. And something about listening to you talk made the devil's advocate in my brain awaken. And just it started to make me think about like what Colorado was lacking last year, because it certainly wasn't talent or mm-mm. skill. Like, I think that's something that we can all just put aside for a moment. This is a Summit team that on paper still rates as like a clear top 4 team, I think, when it's at full strength. It was focus that they lacked. It was, again, that consistency, that rotational kind of knowledge, what you were talking about as far as their offensive chemistry and cohesion. I wonder if there is just a little bit, and I'm kind of almost half trying to convince myself out loud here. Like, I don't know if I believe this either. Like, losing a player again of Spicer's stature is just without real compare right now. He's one of three defensive player of the years ever in league history. But is there maybe a little bit of addition through subtraction? Is there a little bit more of a focus now that they can't say Jesus take the wheel and Spicer just kind of takes over for 3 to 5 break opportunities per game, right? Like, that's kind of how they treated the offense a little bit in 2022 with Nethercutt. And that is at times how they treated the defense and how Spicer would lead those counterattacks, where it was just like, he's such a known, he's so central, we don't really have to maybe pay attention as much as we need to at the margins. And it felt that way again in these close games where there was just this way in which Summit games got away from them. They were, again, 0-4 in one goal losses. It's just, it's the kind of stat that jumps out and says there's got to be kind of a return to a regression here, right? There's got to kind of be something that responds to it this year, and maybe it's the loss of a star. Maybe it's having to figure out some sort of Ewing theory, to borrow from Bill Simmons, potential here of losing your best player and somehow getting to a higher level the next season.
So it's interesting we talk about Cody Spicer the way we do too, because we talk about him like he's this legend that's been playing for like a decade. That's me, not him. Like, he's been here 2 years, but he's been so impactful in those 2 years, right? Like, he's been ubiquitous when it comes to talking about defense in this league, and he's also just carried himself so well. Like, I got the great opportunity to meet him and talk with him at All-Star Weekend in Portland in 2022, and you're just not gonna find a guy who just kind of who plays as big as he does but carries himself with such an air of humility and almost like meekness, which is weird for a guy as big as he is and as athletic as he is. And it was really refreshing to meet him and just kind of talk to him a little bit about just Ultimate, of course, but also just like who he is as a person. And I gotta say, Cody, so happy for you. Like, welcome to fatherhood. Yeah, you'll be, you know, baby will be here before you know it. I've got two kids myself, and you are in for the greatest ride of your life. It's gonna be awesome. All you gotta do is make it through those first 8 weeks, because those first 8 weeks are rough and nothing can prepare you for the lack of sleep you're going to have. But I do hope that as Cody goes into this to the season, that I really hope for him, he just has all of the assurance in the world that he is making the right decision. It is tough. I mean, as somebody who thought they were done playing Ultimate, and here I am, like, I'm back, still here. I can say that saying goodbye to something you've invested so much time into is really hard. And who knows if this is forever goodbye for Cody, or if he ends up coming back in the future. I don't know what that holds. He probably has no clue what the future holds for him at this point. And all those plans are going to go out the door once you've got that baby in your house and you're trying to figure out how to be a dad and, researching things you never thought you would research, like, you know, how to get a vomit stain out of your khaki pants or whatever else. But I really hope the best for him and for his family. And I'm excited for him too. Like, I can speak as a dad, like, it's the most challenging thing I've ever done, but it is by far the most rewarding thing I've ever done too, is being a father. So it's a wilder ride than any Ultimate game has ever given you. So good luck, and I hope that you just soak up every moment this summer. So
yeah, I mean, those are all beautiful words. I'm just going to add some pithy comment about how he can still play single coverage right now. You know, up through, I think, 2 babies, you can deploy that one-on-one strat. And then after that, you're into zone, because you just don't have the personnel to keep up with that kind of offensive attack. And so I feel like if they eventually switch into like a zone formation, that's when Spicer might get a little bit up up to his eyeballs in trouble. But for right now, single coverage, I mean, that's been what Spicer's excelled at. He can do it all. And so I haven't met him personally, so I won't even begin to touch on the stuff that you did, nor am I a father. And so y'all are exceeding me in a host of categories, not only on the field, but off of it. And obviously, you guys.
If anyone has the demeanor to just be, I feel like meeting him, he just has this like calming aura around him. He just, I don't know. I feel like that's going to really benefit him going into this next adventure. So
I feel like that's,
yeah, funny. Best of like, luck to you guys.
You have such a different interpretation because I've only ever known him through game film, and you're talking about a guy who used to clang a disc off of his head every single time he scored. And so I don't know if you can, like, again, I'm not a father, so I don't think you're supposed to like do that with a baby off of your dome, but you know, maybe.
Once the soft spot kind of fills in, you're good.
Yeah, you really need to let those fontanelles develop before you go doing any kind of real heavy head work with a baby. I do know that much. My EMT training did cover that for me back in the day. But no, to your point, I bet he's like great at like cradling, you know, to not get.
He's gonna be the most soothing father of all time. Like I told you, like it was jarring for me too. I meet this guy, I see the intensity he plays with, and I'm like, oh, you are just like a calm dude. Like you're just like so low. I don't even know how to phrase it, but it's just like I can't imagine ever being around him and feeling at ease or on edge at all. Like I would feel no anxiety because he just feels like everything. He just looks like he's under control. Everything's great.
Now I'm really regretting that you guys won't get to match up, because I'd love to have like that audio clip and then the ability to like show a first point matchup and he's just like bodying you out from a disc or something. You're like, that guy seems so nice, and he's just swatting down a disc in your vicinity or something, or you guys are getting into it somehow. I don't know. Anyways.
Well, now I can just talk all the trash in the world because I won't have to worry about any ramifications because he won't be on the field. So, Cody, I know you retired so that you didn't have to deal with this matchup. And until you come back, that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
All right. I'll check back in after the Colorado game too, just in case something else happens in that matchup.
Cut the tape.
But that'll do it for this week's episode of Swing Pass. We will be back again next week, hopefully with some more roster information. I do have some pretty keen inside access to the league roster doc, but a lot of that is still confidential. There are some interesting moves, nothing too groundbreaking, but hopefully we can talk about that more next week. Again, that'll do it for this episode. We'll talk to you soon. Bye now.